U.S. economy is growing faster than we thought.
But what's it going to take to get things really moving?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org for Tuesday, November the 23rd. Coming up, the financial impact of war or peace on the Korean Peninsula, and an insider trading investigation goes deeper. Also, we'll have an action figure that technophiles are lining up for.
But first, there's word today from the government that the economy grew at a faster clip between July and September than originally expected. The latest revision to the nation's gross domestic product, the GDP, has it up 2.5% as opposed to an initial reading of just 2%. John Sylvia is chief economist with Wells Fargo Bank. He's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How do we look at this number? What does it say about the economy right now?
It says the economy continues to grow, perhaps at a pace a little bit below the trend in past for economic recoveries, but the growth is there.
And what's driving this number? Any sector that sort of pops out?
Well, the two sectors that really do drive this are equipment and software spending. That continues to be very strong double-digit gains. And the consumer, very steady pace.
Very steady pace. Anything that needs improvement, though, do you think?
Well, there are lots of areas for improvement if we're going to get back to basically the traditional trend growth of 3.25%, and particularly the American consumer. But structures and non-residential construction continues to be negative, and that's just disappointment.
Typically, John, if we see a change like this, a higher economic output between the initial GDP and then the revised figure, which we're seeing today, does that mean the final number is likely to be better?
Good point. Yes, it means the final number is going to be better, but it also says there's more forward momentum in the economy. So the fourth quarter, which is the quarter we're currently in, is probably going to be another 2.5%, perhaps 3% quarter. So the economy does have good forward momentum.
I want to ask you in our final 30 seconds, what's it going to take? When are we going to know we're there, that the economy really has recovered? What number?
Oh, it's consumer confidence. Once the American consumer believes that their opportunities are there, they'll move forward, and that's when the consumer number will jump, and we'll get the 3% numbers that we've been waiting for.
For GDP.
You got it.
All right, John Sylvia from Wells Fargo in Charlotte. Thank you so much.
Sure.
For more analysis this morning, let's bring in Julie Neiman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She joins us from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Jeremy.
So GDP growth was higher than first thought. Dig into the numbers for us a little bit. Why is the government revising that figure upward?
Well, we had several categories. First of all, cars. Why are there so many new cars? Cash for clunkers shredded most of the usable cars, so there's no inventory. People are forced to buy new. We're seeing manufacturing inventories rise for exports, and computers, cheaper, more powerful, still continuing on. But the economy needs twice that growth to help unemployment. It takes a 5% rise in GDP to make unemployment go down 1%, and that's not likely for a long time, so unemployment stays high. So who continues to spend to make the economy grow? It's going to be the rich and the government.
The rich and the government. What about the rest of us, Julie? We'll probably be doing some shopping this weekend. How does the retail sector look to you as we head into this crucial holiday shopping season?
Well, buying on Black Friday is really important. That's typically when retail companies go from red ink losses to black ink profits. Black Friday is very important. It did start in October, though, so they're really pushing it heavily this year. We're looking at about 2.3% increase in sales, but after that, people have really figured it out. They stay home for about 2 weeks. Retailers get hysterical, I mean really promotional. They advertise even more than the election advertising, but it's less annoying. They start really big giveaways in the last 10 days. Online's going to be huge and growing this year because free shipping. So Black Monday is the big thing everybody's looking for, too. That's when shoppers go back to work and shop online, and it's the worst day for productivity in the office for the year.
And that's next Monday, I believe. Julie Neiman, analyst at Smith Moore & Company, thanks so much, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
We're going to get the answer to some questions today when the Federal Reserve releases the details of its last meeting. When they met, the Fed pulled the trigger on a $600 billion bond-buying spree to spur even more growth in the economy. What were they thinking when they made that big decision? Here's Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon.
Look for signals of the Fed's determination. So says Georgetown professor Philip Swagel. The former Fed economist says monetary policymakers are under mounting criticism internationally, here at home, and even inside the central bank itself.
I would look for some discussion of how much the Fed will do and under what conditions it will do more or it will stop.
Swagel says the record might show to what degree the Fed policymakers considered it necessary to pour more money into the economy.
The Fed really thinks we need more fiscal stimulus. The Congress has said no. I would say the American people voted and said no more spending, and so the Fed is doing it for us. They won't put that in the minutes, but that is the clear subtext.
And Swagel doubts the Fed will be so bold the next time it meets.
I think the outside criticism will make the Fed somewhat more hesitant to take extraordinary action.
Some Republican lawmakers say Congress and the president should decide fiscal policy. They're pushing to weaken the Fed's authority. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, November 23rd. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States?
South Korea's central bank said today it's going to work with the government in Seoul to keep markets stable. That is after an exchange of artillery fire between North and South Korea that left at least two South Korean Marines dead. The BBC's Roland Burke is with us from Tokyo to talk about how this is not just a regional issue. Hi, Roland.
Hello there.
What is the immediate global financial fallout from these hostilities?
Well, the markets that were open fell. The Hong Kong Hang Seng was down by 2.7%. Singapore's index lost 1.6%. It was actually quite well-timed, perhaps, for the markets in South Korea and Japan. South Korea's market was closed, and in Japan it's a public holiday. But I think we can expect to see reaction in Japan when the markets open here, because Japan is very well aware, after a rocket was fired over the country's main island by North Korea last year, that its cities, too, are within range of the long-range munitions of North Korea.
Why are investors the initial reactors here?
Well, I think it's because they've got the most to lose. They realize that even though they can take the run-of-the-mill provocations of North Korea in their stride, a big event like this could be a game-changer. When you look at the costs of potential outcomes of a really serious incident on the Korean Peninsula, they're huge. If you had a war, which everyone does think is probably very unlikely, you could see South Korean cities shelled. You could even see Japanese cities shelled. Or let's say that the Koreas reunite. That would have huge economic implications too. The costs of that have been estimated at $1 trillion. So it's little wonder that when something like this happens, investors run for cover.
So even between war or peace, we're talking about a lot of money.
Yes, vast sums of money in some of the biggest economies in this part of Asia. Japan, of course, the second or third, depending on whether China actually has overtaken at this precise moment in the world. And South Korea, a rising economy, both potentially under threat from North Korea, whatever happens.
The BBC's Roland Burke in Tokyo. Roland, thank you.
Thank you.
Investors are voicing doubts about Ireland's massive bailout. A lot of the skepticism is also about politics. And as Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports from London, some of the problems stem from the fact that those rescue plans are fuzzy and flexible from the get-go.
Investors were already fretting over the lack of detail about the Irish rescue package. We still don't know exactly how much Ireland will borrow from its European partners and how much from the IMF. We don't know whether there are any strings attached, and now there's an added and perhaps fatal uncertainty. The government in Dublin is falling apart and could face an election soon. Howard Wealdon is an analyst with BGC Partners.
Markets are quite obviously are perceiving that whatever deal is agreed with the current government and the IMF and European Stability Fund, that it may never see the light of day.
And piling more pressure on the beleaguered euro, there are fresh doubts about the Greek bailout. EU and IMF officials are in Athens today to assess whether Greece should get another slice of funding. The country's just admitted that its public debt is much worse than had been revealed. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Steve, a strange tale now from Northern California. A man was rescued yesterday after being stranded on an island in a bay just northeast of San Francisco, where he had survived for 5 days on vitamins and native plants.
Well, was he stranded? I mean, he couldn't get in touch with anybody?
Well, it turns out that he could have gotten in touch with the authorities if he had wanted to. He did have a cell phone with him, but he didn't use it because he said he didn't want taxpayers to have to foot the bill for a Coast Guard rescue.
Oh, my God. So what happened?
So he finally did use his cell phone to call a friend of his who called the Coast Guard who rescued him. So we've paid up for that guy, I guess, at this point. You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, November 23rd. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
Well, that wide-ranging investigation we've been talking about into insider trading, it's getting more serious. FBI agents have seized documents in coordinated raids at different hedge funds in New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale is on the line with us with the latest. Good morning, John.
Hello, Jeremy.
Well, what's the FBI looking for in these raids?
This is a three-year-old investigation into the trafficking of corporate secrets, the kind of information that can move markets, things like confidential merger talks or maybe a new product in the pipeline. And investigators have discovered that there are a growing number of firms or professional groups that get inside tips and then sell them to hedge funds, which are those big investment funds that only are for very wealthy players.
Mm-hmm. And is the timing important in these raids, John? Why is this happening right now?
Well, it's partly because of the growing number of these groups that traffic in inside information. But that's a good question because insider trading is no recent phenomenon. In fact, Wall Street lawyer Bill Singer says it's been going on for generations, and these investigations are unnecessarily shaking up markets because the investigators have been too slow to bring charges.
And the uncertainty as to which hedge funds will be indicted and which brokerage firms will be indicted has injected such an amount of panic the last day or two in the market that it's obviously going to drive prices down a bit and shareholders will be hurt.
Shareholders will be hurt, John. What happens next?
Well, we're expecting charges and maybe arrests before the year is out, and it could hit some of the biggest names on Wall Street, including Goldman Sachs.
Okay, Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. Thanks.
Thank you.
A voluntary market for buying and selling greenhouse gas credits is going to shut down at the end of the year. The Chicago Climate Exchange started trading carbon emissions way back in 2003. The program was intended to play a major role in a national strategy to reduce global warming pollution. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
450 companies participated in the Chicago Climate Exchange's carbon trading program. Corporate giants like Ford and American Electric Power agreed to a limit on carbon emissions. Those that polluted less could then sell their emissions credits. The companies expected that Congress would soon make such a system mandatory. But it didn't, and it won't anytime soon, especially since Republicans now rule the U.S. House. Conservatives like Nick Loris at the Heritage Foundation say cap and trade is deader than dead.
A lot of people are saying this is another nail in the coffin. I think it's even further along than that. I think, you know, the coffin's already buried and people are shoveling the dirt on top of it right now.
This is really a sad day where a market approach to solving an environmental problem looks like it's falling by the wayside.
That's Yale's Dan Esty. He says it's ironic that conservatives are cheering the demise of a market-based solution to global warming. But analyst Emily Mazzucarati at Point Carbon thinks it's too early to write the obituary.
Because you have carbon markets at the regional level.
Mazzucarati notes that Californians recently voted to continue with plans for an emissions trading program in the state. And don't forget, 10 northeastern states have been doing it under a regional program since 2008. A recent study, though, criticized the northeastern program for setting its emissions targets too low. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, today, Sarah Palin's new book comes out. It's called America by Heart, Reflections on Family, Faith, and Flag. Many people are speculating that the book is the beginning of a presidential campaign.
I've heard that, but Brand Palin is already winning votes, Steve, or should I say winning dollars. Mm. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
It's a bull market for the Mama Grizzly. Since quitting her job as Alaska's governor, Sarah Palin has been getting $100,000 speaking fees. Her first book deal was reportedly worth $7 million. She's got a million-dollar contract with Fox. And her new show, Sarah Palin's Alaska, is a monster hit and apparently paying her a monster sum, $250,000 an episode.
This was flipping fun. I'd rather be doing this than in some stuffy old political office. I'd rather be out here being free.
All told, Palin is earning about $10 million a year. Brand strategist Jeff Gregory says the reason she's such a big earner is that her brand really resonates.
You want to get mad at Washington? You're with Sarah Palin. You want to get upset over increased taxes? You get mad with Sarah Palin. She can be a little hokey sometimes, but that's what she does. She does it very well.
Could Palin take the White House? Gregory says even if she tries and fails, it will enhance her brand. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, I know what I'd like to get you for Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You pretty much have everything, I think. iMac, yes. iPad, MacBook, Apple TV. You got everything, right? What about?
If you say so.
I think so. How about a Steve Jobs action figure?
Oh, wow. Now, that is an Apple product that I didn't actually think that I needed.
It features the Apple CEO with his trademark black mock turtleneck, blue jeans and sneakers, right? Has removable glasses. You could take the glasses on and off, which I think is cool. Unfortunately, Jeremy, the company marketing the doll, MIC Gadgets, has completely sold out. So your present is going to have to wait. when they sell more, though, and you know they're going to sell more of these. I think they go for like $80
a
pop. Maybe they'll include a kung fu grip for the iPhone.
I'm going to wait for that, buddy. You always want to get the second version of anything that
has
to do with Apple.
Second generation.
That's right. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. I'm on Twitter at Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. I'm on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.